Well, I'll start by saying my name is Chris Bell, and today's date is the 3rd of September, 1982, and I'm talking to Captain Ellis at his home. And last day, sir, I think we were talking about you being part of Escort Group 5.
That's right.
In the Atlantic, and you just sunk two U-boats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you initially said that you were on board the Royal Navy boat, the Neame,
That's right.
The
Neame.
Were you on board that frigate through your entire period in Escort Group 5?
Yes. No, not the entire period, because of the last cruise we did, we went up to Russia and I was in Waskasu then.
Which was
Neame had
boat.
Been sent over to this side for a refit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I transferred with the senior officer to Waskasu.
And that was a Canadian boat?
Yes, Canadian. Yes, she was one of the first frigates built by Yarrow.
Oh,
out
of this one?
Yes.
How did your designation change? Because you were a general staff officer at this time. Not general staff, but
just staff officer, yes.
That's right. How did you get into that to begin with? Because my experience with Army officers is that they have to go through extensive courses to become, quote, a staff officer.
Yes. But of course, in wartime, that sort of thing wasn't possible.
No.
And staff officer simply meant, I suppose,
the
general assistant to the senior officer.
Mm-hmm.
And the liaison between him and the other ships of the group.
Mm-hmm. How long were you with Escort Group 5?
It changed to Escort Group 6 after a while, which is very confusing, but it was the same group.
Was it? Did it change the name?
It changed the number because it wasn't confused with Canadian Group 5, which was a close escort group running to and fro across the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm. Where the close escort stayed with the convoy the entire distance.
Yes, and ours was a support group, switching from convoy to convoy, according to where the U-boat activity was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. You said you were with, on two U-boat sinkings. Approximately when would they be in terms of time? I think we're talking 1944 about this time, aren't we?
44, yes. Well, actually, yes, the back end of 43, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And the spring of 44, yes.
Because you mentioned the sinking of the Athabascan.
That's right, yes.
And I looked it up, and I think it was August 1944.
43.
Was it August 43?
I think.
You could be right there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because we had just vacated the Bay of Biscay,
mm-hmm.
and Athabascan and a small group with her came into... what we were supposed to be doing was keeping watch on U-boats trying to get out into the Atlantic by creeping along the coast of northern Spain,
mm-hmm.
and so forth.
Did you ever set foot in Spain?
Not at that time, no. We just looked at northern Spain. Not too closely, not too long, because these buzz bomb German planes arrived, and we thought it was much healthier to get out of there. Then we were sent then to a convoy which was coming up from Gibraltar,
mm-hmm.
and we joined that, which was also attacked by buzz bombs, ineffectively.
But when you say buzz bombs, you mean the...
I don't mean buzz bombs, I mean glider bombs.
Mm-hmm.
They were wireless controlled by the aircraft which launched them.
What sort of drone type
yes.
ideas, yeah.
And they were supposed to steer them onto a target.
I see. Were they ever effective? Did they ever...
Well, they had their Athabascans, and they hit one ship in the convoy we were then escorting. And it was then that we sank the first U-boat in EG5/6. And the other one was early January, I think, of 44.
Mm-hmm. Now, you just mentioned the number. Was that the U-boat number?
No, I didn't know what... No, that's the group number I was saying, you know, EG5/6. It changed from 5 to 6.
Mm-hmm. You don't recall the number of either U-boat that you were in on?
No. But that book I have would tell us if we need to know.
Mm-hmm. You can always look it up after.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the probably the most interesting trip we did was a run up to Murmansk.
Mm-hmm.
We were sent up to Scapa Flow first, and then joined a very strong escort force, taking a Greek passenger ship and about a couple of merchant ships up to Murmansk. What's the Greek passenger ship would be? I don't know. Never discovered to this day. But to escort those three vessels, mm-hmm. we had two small aircraft carriers, one cruiser,
mm-hmm.
A flotilla of destroyers, and our support group. 16 escorts.
And how many cargo?
Three ships.
What either of these two escort carriers, one of the two Canadian ones?
No,
they bother
no, they weren't. No, but they're the same class.
The
small carriers.
The escort carriers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Was it during the dead of winter?
No, fortunately it was April by now,
mm-hmm.
and so it's daylight all the time. By the time we got north of the Arctic Circle.
Do you get much harrying attacks from Nazi aircraft on Norway and areas like that?
We were shadowed by aircraft from Norway, yes.
Long range
aircraft? As you know, the channel becomes reasonably narrow because off North Cape of Norway there's an island called Bear Island.
Mm.
And the channel is between the two, and it's only, I suppose, about 50 miles wide. So we had to go, you couldn't disguise your route very well,
no.
but pretty well had to plow through and hope for the best.
I suppose this is where the aircraft of the two carriers would come
in. They
were
very effective, yes.
Would they be carrying fighter as well as reconnaissance?
Yes, mostly fighters, I think.
Hurricanes and Spitz?
They were actually... an American type of plane called a Hellcat or a Bearcat or something.
Or a Wildcat.
Wildcat, yes.
There are a couple.
Some sort of a cat. I don't remember what.
Yeah, the Americans always had rather flamboyant names for their airplanes, didn't
yes.
they? Yes. Flamboyant pilots, too.
And one of them got shot down. We fished the pilot out of the drink, but that was the only loss we had on the way up.
Mm-hmm.
We're coming south. With not quite so strong an escort, and six merchant ships this time, we lost one of the merchant ships.
What would they be carrying from Russia to the to Ukraine?
Well, they were pretty empty going there.
Mm-hmm. Was this the only Russian trip you did?
The only Russian trip we did.
This was in the Neen again, was it?
This in Moscow. Neen had by this time gone off to this side of the ocean
mm-hmm.
for a debrief it.
So what would you have been on?
He was then going to be turned over to the RCN.
Ah.
I was in Waskasu.
Yeah. Was that a frigate as well?
Yes.
That's right, the...
This one built here, yes.
Who was the captain?
Jimmy Stewart.
Not the... not the actor.
No, I beg your pardon, not Stewart. Fraser, Jimmy Fraser. He was a an ex RCMP chap, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We've been chasing rum runners off the East Coast before the war. Quite a character.
Was he a good captain?
Oh, I think so, yes.
Mm-hmm. How is discipline on a frigate? Were relationships between officers fairly loose, or was there always the distinction between rank? Because I think in the corvettes, which you were on earlier, there would have been very little distinction.
There is. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably... true in the frigates too. Anyway, things were slightly more easy going than in, we'll say,
a battleship
or a cruiser.
Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy your service on the frigates?
Well, very much, yes.
Tell me something, when you joined up, or when you were mobilized in 1939, what was your long-range intention for the war? Did you intend to do sea duty? Or was
it
to be used
mm-hmm.
wherever you could?
I intended to do sea duty. I thought that I might, perhaps because I was on the West Coast, do most of it on the West Coast. But that's not the way the Navy works. You come from the West Coast, you serve on the East Coast. Vice versa.
No, it seems to work out that way,
doesn't
it?
Yeah.
So how long were you with escort groups 5 and 6?
Altogether, a year. Just a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we got back from the Murmansk run, there was a signal awaiting me, appointing me to Ottawa, to the Naval Staff as the AS officer, which I didn't at all appreciate because everyone was just getting ready for D-Day.
Mm-hmm.
And
here
you were. A sort of general excitement in the air,
mm-hmm.
anticipation. And then here was I sent back to Ottawa of all places.
Had you been doing much AS work on board the frigates? Because you said you were the staff officer and not
yes.
directly the anti-submarine officer.
No, but I was responsible for the AS officer, so to speak, and his minions.
Mm-hmm.
His ratings, and generally advising on tactics and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Had AS work, the ASDIC work, changed much from when you had first been taught it in Halifax? Had they improved upon it?
Yes, I think there were new sets coming into use and refinements of old sets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the important things which was just coming into use was the depth recorders, as you know.
Depth finder type.
Yes.
Yeah. And that was an offshoot of the ASDIC, I suppose,
yes.
using the pings.
Because the ASDIC gave you horizontal range, but you hadn't got anything to give you vertical depth.
Which would have been very important for laying depth charges.
Yes, indeed, yes.
Yeah. So you went to Ottawa and you were made a staff officer in charge of AS?
Right.
Under who? Or under who?
Oh, under the Vice Chief of Naval Staff. He was the chairman of the Naval Staff.
Mm-hmm.
And the specialist officers were all members of Naval Staff.
And were these all permanent force members from before the war?
No, nearly all. Oh, the senior ones were, yes. But the others were wartime people like myself.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to endure that very long,
no.
because 4 months after that appointment, I was sent as officer in charge of the anti-submarine school in Cornwallis,
mm-hmm.
which is where all the anti-submarine training was now concentrated.
This must have been quite a plum job, actually, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
I got promoted to commander.
Temporary
yeah.
acting commander. Have to add that every time.
Yeah, had to add that.
Yeah.
And my old friend, Dutchy Edwards, was, of course, the captain of the base. You know, he was commanding
mm-hmm.
the whole of the big base.
What do you think the reason was that you were kept out or pulled back before D-Day? Was it possible because you were your age, you think?
Possibly, but I think that they like to have
the experience.
Someone who just come from sea experience
mm.
up in Ottawa to perhaps be able to give some useful advice about this or that.
Well, to inject some practical advice as
yes.
opposed to theoretical advice.
Yes.
Yeah. But it must have been rather a good experience being at Cornwallis.
Oh, it was indeed, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was a tremendous base.
Did you still have the old Dutch submarine to practice on?
I think we'd got an old RN submarine by that time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember too accurately. Yes, I think it must have been.
How large a base was it at Cornwallis?
In acreage? or number of personnel?
Number of personnel, actually.
Number of personnel.
Yeah.
So I think if everyone was mustered for church parade on Sunday, there would have been about 2,000 people.
And that's including students? When I say students,
yes.
I mean people taking the course.
Yes, it's most of the new entries taking their preliminary courses
mm-hmm.
and then being shuffled out to sea from there.
Would you be using as for training vessels, corvettes?
Yes, they used all those old yachts that had been called out for the beginning of the war for patrol duties.
Mm-hmm.
Now had ethnic domes stuck on them or guns and stuff, and were used for the elementary training. Rather better sea conditions in the Bay of Fundy than we had up at Victor, and as I told you, it was almost impossible
to
find a submarine even when you knew where it was. Bay of Fundy wasn't too bad.
So all went smoothly at Cornwallis.
Yes. And there I was when VE Day came along.
Mm-hmm. So what happened? Did the base close down at VE Day, or was there still preparation because of the Japanese war?
It was still, yes, because the war was still going on. Everyone was given the option of volunteering for the Japanese war.
Did you?
Or, yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. And were there any immediate results of that? Volunteering? Were you posted anything?
No, soon, because by the time August came along and the two bombs had been dropped,
BJ,
it was obvious there wasn't going to be any activity in the Japanese war anymore.
No. So did you intend to stay in the Navy? Or to return to teaching?
Yes, I had to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it might be a bit tough on the chap who had succeeded me at Brentwood and steered it all through the war if I came back. So I applied to transfer to the instructor branch of the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And for an appointment to the Naval College out at Royal Road there. And to my great surprise, I was accepted for both for the instructor branch and for a job at the Naval College.
Really?
Where I intended to be a sort of old nautical Mr. Chips, stay there for the rest of my life. But unfortunately that didn't happen either.
What did happen? You went to Royal
Road? After 2 years, Royal Road, yes.
What were you teaching at Royal Road?
I was teaching English literature and English composition and all other English subjects.
Well, plus, tell me, I know this for young.
That's pilotage.
That's pilotage?
Yes.
So that was sort of a mixed bag, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a nice change.
Yeah. But how did the cadets respond to English literature? Were they fairly open to it? Because that's something that military types, and I use that term rather loosely,
take kindly to.
Or indulge in, I suppose.
No. Well, it was important from the point of view, naturally, of being able to write a reasonable dispatch or
mm-hmm.
report of proceedings, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to use more or less contemporary method. I think, rather to my surprise, I got quite interested in Masefield because I read them Right Royal and Reynard the Fox. Do you know Masefield? Or Masefield?
No, no.
And meeting some of my pupils afterwards, those are the things they've remembered
mm-hmm.
about their English instruction.
So what happened after 2 years? Were you given the option?
Well, after 2 years, I was sent to Ottawa again.
At your request, or?
No, very much nothing.
Not the Navy.
No, there was a vacancy for Director of Naval Education, because the man who had been doing it during the war had gone off to RNC,
mm-hmm.
and the person who should have had the job was the director of studies at Royal Road. He was the next senior instructor officer.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't want to move.
Mm-hmm.
And he had more pull than I did. So I was sent there to Ottawa as director of labor education, and he soldiered on as director of studies at Royal Road.
And what
was the house went with that job, too.
Did you have a nice house at Royal Road? Or were you married to Port?
We lived in one of the gatehouses.
Well, that sounds pleasant.
Yes.
Yeah.
It had the extraordinary name of Bugslags. I never knew who Bugslag was.
So what sort of duties did you have in Ottawa as head of naval education? Was that, did that encompass training, or was it just simply education in a cadet, that sort of thing?
Mostly.
So it wasn't deep, just as education?
Yeah, there was a theory at that time that formal education should keep step with promotion of ratings from one rank to another. That if you want to move from leading seaman to petty officer, you should not only know the techniques of naval craft, but it should also improve your formal education at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So this was extraordinarily unpopular with all ranks.
Yeah, I imagine so. Really. A lot of people who dropped out of school would have no chance for promotion, or less chance. And I suppose if one had a PhD in some course, he could become an admiral right away.
Yes, that's the sort of theory.
Yeah. Did you change this at all, or did you?
Well, I soft-pedaled it as much as I could.
Mm-hmm. Well, who was keen on doing this? Who wanted this implemented?
Well, I think that the man who had been director of naval education,
it was
Percy Lowe,
mm-hmm.
and this is a legacy he left to me when he went off to sort of revitalize RMC. And there was a good deal of sense in it. And we offered all sorts of courses to people who wanted to improve their educational standing.
Mm-hmm.
And the instructor officers were responsible for teaching these things and also for doing the theory work in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody at the naval school was, might be torpedo school or whatnot, besides the practical work, must have some theory, of electrical theory, for example, in the torpedo school,
mm-hmm.
Keeping pace with the practical.
Actually, it's a fairly good idea in the concept, I suppose.
Yes, and the concept at the time was a bit tough on some of the older ratings.
The old salts.
Yes. Yeah. They had no intention of going back to the classroom again, if they could help it.
And one can see their point of view, I suppose.
Yes.
But for the younger ones, I see nothing wrong. And
except you can have an extremely efficient leading seaman, gunner,
mm-hmm.
and so forth, who knowledge of theory might be pretty elementary.
Mm-hmm. I think that's part of the problem with the armed forces in the United States today. Is the fact that their educational level is so low that it's bringing down their efficiency as a fighting unit.
Yes. Particularly as the weapons and things they're dealing with become more and more complicated.
Well, the technology improves, whereas the educational standard is going down.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't think has ever been a problem in the Canadian forces, has it? Because
no, I don't think so.
Because,
of course, we haven't got some of the most sophisticated machines.
No, I guess you really don't.
Still rather in the bow and arrow stage.
No, heck, we're not quite that bad. But I think we're about 20-25 years behind the major powers.
Maybe, yes.
Our naval ships alone, most of them were built in the 50s, in the early 60s. So you were at naval education. How long were you there?
2 years.
So we're looking at
normal for a naval appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to sea in Magnificent, still as a senior instructor officer,
mm-hmm.
but with a little other work thrown in. And that was very enjoyable, particularly.
Oh, that, the Maggie was the ship in the Canadian Navy, wasn't it?
Yes, she was, yes.
Yeah.
And the last cruise he did was all around the capitals of the NATO countries,
mm-hmm.
which was very pleasant.
What year was this in?
Hmm?
What year was this in?
51. 49, 51, something like that. Might be 50.
Yeah.
And A long time back.
Mm-hmm. And you cruised all the NATO capitals?
Yes, we did one delightful cruise, which we went across to Northern Scotland to begin with, mm-hmm. then Norway, Denmark, Holland, France, Portugal, Gibraltar, and home for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
They're all very nice.
Very nice, yeah. Well, did the Korean War do anything to the Magnificent? Was she taken to the...
The only thing it did was to rob us of two destroyers. We were supposed to have four destroyers and the Magnificent to do this barnstorming thing.
Mm-hmm.
But two of the destroyers got locked off and sent to Korea instead.
But there was no...
They didn't alter our program at all.
But there was no thought given to the Maggie being sent?
No, I don't think so.
She was part of the Canadian contribution to NATO, I suppose.
She was NATO, yes.
Yeah. What were your duties? You said educational officer on the Maggie?
Yes.
And what would one do as that? In charge of the instruction of...
In charge of, yes, the people who want to take these educational courses.
Oh, so it wasn't a mandatory program, it was purely elective.
Yes, but your promotion depended
upon
on your taking one of these courses.
Yeah. Did many people take advantage of it?
I suppose, yes. There were usually 20 or 30 people doing various courses.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an assistant, unfortunately. And then my other duties at the action station, I ran the surface plot.
Which would meant any surface ships in the area would
be plotting where they were and what they're doing, yes.
Okay. So
this was made to blow the navigating bridge where the captain would be and mm-hmm. officer watch and so forth.
A sort of war room, so to speak.
Yes.
Yeah. So you
and then there was a separate one for the aircraft. Mm-hmm. Air direction. They had a different room altogether, a vast space.
What was the Maggie flying in 1951?
The C version of the Spitfire, I think they were just getting rid of those, and...
Called Sea Fire?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
And they were getting an American aircraft, which is a heavier aircraft.
The F-86?
Mm. Something like that, I think. I've completely forgotten, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. But I suppose the idea of the Maggie on that trip was merely to show the flag in different ports, to see that Canada was actually
yes.
doing something.
Of course, the flag boys kept on flying, keep their hand in,
mm-hmm.
and everything was done for their benefit, naturally enough.
So you must have enjoyed yourself on the cruise.
That was very pleasant, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because we also did a cruise down to the West Indies and to Havana.
Tell
me
about Havana before the revolution. What kind of city was it like?
Havana was tremendous.
Yeah.
You were either extremely rich and drove a Cadillac or extremely poor and just hoped to win the next lottery.
Yeah. Was it as much a...
It was entirely corrupt, I think, the government at that time.
You've read Graham Greene's Our Man in Havana, I suppose.
Yes.
Was it like that?
Yes, I think that was very accurate.
Yeah. It must have been fascinating to be a tourist down there, if you weren't killed, I suppose.
Yes, I thought it was just a very interesting place.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Americans had an enormous naval base at Guantanamo, at the other end of the island.
Mm-hmm. Still do, isn't that?
Very really cool. Yes, they still do. It's
kind
of like
a
anomaly.
Gibraltar, isn't it?
Yes.
It's awfully strange with the Cubans being almost sworn enemies of the Americans.
Yes, that still persisted.
Yeah. I suppose you had a very nice tan on your cruise down south.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Who was the captain of the Maggie at that time?
Adams. Ken Adams.
Mm-hmm.
He lives out here somewhere in Sydney.
Oh, Does it?
Yes.
That's my neck of the woods, so perhaps I should knock on his door.
Yes, I think you should. Yeah. He's a very interesting chap and a magnificent ship handler.
Mm-hmm.
He astonished me no reason by taking magnificence alongside without using any tugs at all.
And the Maggie was a big boat, about 20,000 tons.
Yes. Yes, she was a big ship.
Yeah. Well, not in comparison to something like the USS Nimitz. About 100,000 tons.
Yeah.
But still, a big ship at its time, I suppose. It has been an RN ship at one time, hasn't it?
Yes, she was built for the RN.
Yeah.
And then there
it was after the war, wasn't it? Because we had something called the Warrior just after the war.
There was Warrior first, and then Magnificence, and finally Bonaventure was the last of the ones.
Were they all the same class of ship?
Magnificence, I think, was a bit bigger than Warrior,
but
Magnificence and Bonaventure were about the same size.
Yeah. But they were sort of loaned to us, whereas
yes.
we bought the Bonaventure eventually, I suppose.
I think we did, yes.
But I think we
sold. And it has millions of dollar reefers and then scrap there.
That's absolutely...
Yes.
They spent millions in 1967 to have it refit, and then in 1970 they decided it's no longer viable.
Yeah.
Absolutely silly. And since then it's been downhill for the Navy. Really it has been.
Yes, it has.
Yeah. There's nothing to center the Navy around. But what happened to you after the Magnificent? In 1951, I guess.
Oh, I was promoted to instructor captain and went back to Ottawa as director of naval training. This chief duties there were to devise a scheme for the regular supply of permanent force officers to the Navy, and the starting up of the services colleges. This is the time of Brooke Claxton and his effort to amalgamate three services, which was things were taken up later by a heavier and rather rougher which causing a decimation of the admirals.
And yes, an air vice marshal in the Air Force as well.
Yeah.
What did you think of the idea of amalgamation? Did you think it had some merit?
I thought it had some merit, but...
But amalgamation as opposed to unification? Like amalgamation...